Hello, and welcome to the Burley Times. I want to thank Paula Gordon and Ian Cobb for taking the time to have conversations with the candidates and to be able to share those conversations with you. Anecdotally, I've talked to some of the candidates, and they're having some degree of difficulty engaging folks in this campaign. There seems to be some apathy and simple disinterest. I encourage you to please engage the candidates. Find out who they are, what they stand for, because this is an extremely important election for Kimberley, for the region, and for the province. Not that all elections aren't important, but this one in particular, because we no longer have an incumbent that is running for re-election. So the MLA that we get is going to be extremely important for us to be able to achieve our objectives over the next 4 years. So engage the candidates, find out what they stand for, please listen to these conversations, and most importantly, on May the 9th, get out and vote.
Justin Hulis, you are running as an independent for the MLA position for Columbia River Revelstoke, and it always interests me to know why people do things. I'm supposed to ask what questions and not why questions, but then when you're going to run as an independent, it seems that there might be a why question in there. Just briefly let us know who you are and why you would do this.
Okay, well, it started for me. I started to get involved in politics a few years back, and when it came up to the federal election, I really wanted to see how it worked, and I really wanted to get to know it. You see that all the things that it's doing and all the things that it could do, which is really what I'm in it for, is the things that it could do. And as I got more involved, you started to see how the parties work and where they come up with platform. And I decided to follow this all the way through, and I followed it right to a national convention. And at the national conventions, you get to see how they debate policy and they talk about policy and how they decide what becomes the government's policy and essentially in the future, the government's platform. And what I seen out of this was that at times when it's a big issue that affects everybody, they can do a good job. People get to go in, you get to debate it, you talk about it, majority votes, and whatever the vote is becomes the new rules. And like I said, it can work for a big policy, but when it comes to all the small community stuff, every single small community issue got voted right down. And it ultimately came to almost the same question every time. In Quebec, it was about a bridge they've been trying to get built for years. But somebody stands up and goes, my community spent 15 years trying to get this bridge built for us. We finally got it done. Why is your issue a federal issue? Why does this matter to the entire country? And it doesn't. And it's they don't represent communities. They represent the party. And it doesn't balance out very well.
Well, then, let's think about communities specifically. The city of Kimberley is where you live and where we are, and it is one of the anchor stores, if you will, in this riding. I'd like an understanding from you of what you think the key issues are and the opportunities here in Kimberley and as a representative of the other cities in the riding.
Well, going around and talking to people, I think affordable housing is probably one of the biggest issues in this entire election going on right now. And I think it spreads a lot further than our Liberal government's really ready to admit that it is. It's a lot bigger than just the low-income people. It's a lot of medium-income people who can't possibly live on their own, and they're never going to be able to buy a house even here. You know, they talk about how the rents or the cost of a house is getting up to be $1 million up in Vancouver. But even in our own area, people can't afford that deposit. And their 5% assistance to that it's not going to change that. It's going to help some people for sure. It'll make it so people spend a little bit less when they do buy their first home. But it's certainly not a solution.
What more do you think government can do?
Well, I kind of have been developing a plan on this. This is an issue that I really got going on. And when you start doing the research, a lot of the answers are kind of already out there. And I think the biggest change that our government could do to start making a difference in this would be if they were to switch to ownership instead of trying to make renters. If they were to go and set a limit to how much they're trying to make it cost, and there's a lot of options to do this within $75,000 for a single person, a little bit more if you're looking at a big family house, but there's a lot of cheap options out there. The answers are being produced. And if they were to go and set that limit, say $75,000, and then do a rent-to-own system with everybody and make it so that they're paying their own property taxes, they're paying for their own maintenance, For a lot of people, this would solve the issue. You could get rent down to as little as $300, $400, $500, depending on what you want to work out with the people and how long they want to be on a mortgage. All of that money that's being invested in would come back into it, and you'd be able to reinvest it into future homes. And yeah,
okay,
would down our costs a lot.
Is there a constituency for that?
What do you mean by that?
Well, both in terms of who would avail themselves of that opportunity and those who would fund it.
Well, hopefully, I mean, that's part of why I'm running, is the hope that I can get the provincial government to fund it. And I think that there would be a lot of people interested in going that route. And come 25 years from now, we'd have a free supply of money for it. Obviously, right now, we're already investing money. The government's already putting $920 million into building affordable units. They only intend to build 5,300 out of that, which works out to $173,000 per unit, which really isn't all that impressive when it comes to the low-income people.
No, and it's just somebody making money, I think.
That's exactly what it is, in my opinion. It's the very people who donate to them who are getting these projects, and they're just making money.
Yeah.
And affordable housing needs to be about affordable housing and not making money.
Yeah, and it's not a provincial answer. It's more lower mainland-centric, I think. But
yeah.
Ian, you have experience up and down the riding. Would this play out throughout the riding?
For sure, especially in this riding, with more reliance on the tourism industry in this riding as opposed to Kootenay East. Yeah, the Columbia Valley with all the tourism jobs. Sure.
The issues seem to be in this election cycle around a lot of things that are affected by money. Now, that sounds kind of like a truism, but the money issues with affordable housing is one of the issues. What other issues do you see that would be that kind of a foundational money issue?
Well, obviously, corporate donations has become a big talk, and obviously that needs to come to an end. I think we need to look at what the federal government's done with their stuff and follow suit in a lot of ways. We need limits. We need to make it so that you can only donate so much so that they have to talk to more people instead of just a few rich people. You need to go and change it so that only British Columbians can donate. Right now, anybody in the entire world can donate to our provincial parties. That includes people over in other countries, obviously other provinces. Our parties do fundraise in other provinces. They regularly hold them in Calgary. Both parties do that. And obviously, that's not in the interest of British Columbians. And
Does that have a specific application to opportunities in Kimberley itself?
Well, it has to do with basically the government being accountable to people and not to corporations, and it'll affect everything if that goes through, because it'll make it so a lot more of the money is going to go to the individuals and the people who want to be heard, and it'll motivate them to listen more to a place like us, who, you know, we still do have a population of people who could be their donors, but we don't have a lot of big corporations who can buy interest out of them.
The Columbia River Revelstoke riding has common issues that affect all parts of the riding. What would you say? Well, let's spend 4 or 5 minutes thinking about this. What would some of those common interests be?
Well, obviously, tourism's huge. Forestry's right across our whole area. And there's definitely quite a few connectors. A lot of our towns have a very similar feel, you know. A lot of people from out of town going door to door. I've been surprised how many people I find who are non-residents, you know, living here. It's obviously means they can't vote for me, but I've had an amazing number. Even in Kimberley, that happens. In Invermere, it's out of control, depending what area you're in, especially. But we've definitely got a lot that connects us.
You're shaking your head with a yes on that, Ian. When you say non-residents, you're not just talking about people who can't vote for you, but you're talking about a transient kind of element within the whole riding?
The Columbia Valley is is very unique. I mean, the Elk Valley is a bit like it, and Kimberley's got a little bit of it, but a third of the houses in Invermere are second homes, and two-thirds of the houses in Windermere and on the east side of Lake Windermere are second homes. So,
is that true in Revelstoke as well?
I wouldn't think so, no. The expansion of the ski hill may have added a few more, but Revelstoke is definitely more of the working town in the area.
So the commonalities across the riding are there, but there are also serious differences.
Yeah, for sure. We're all in very different places.
How do you represent Revelstoke as a working town and Kimberly, just for instance, or Windermere in this case, as a tourist-based town? How do you represent all of these interests in one guy?
Well, for me, this is part of why I think you need to be an independent, because as a person who's involved with the party, they expect certain things out of you and they expect you to represent certain issues. But as an independent, you're free to represent everybody, and I can dedicate all my time in the Legislative Assembly to representing my community. And so I can ask questions from people in Revelstoke, from people in Kimberley. I can raise their issues. I can try to actually represent everybody. And obviously it's a challenge, and obviously there's some differences in our riding. And, you know, you got to do the best you can.
Did you flow into being an independent candidate because none of the established parties speak to you, or?
Well, I took some time to look into that and to really look at it. And looking at the Green Party, I looked at YPP, your political party of BC. They actually offered to have me join them, but I didn't necessarily want to go that route.
Say again, what is YPP?
Your political party. So
your political party?
Yes.
I thought that's what you said.
Yes, that's their name.
Well, there are something like 34 or 62. There are a lot of parties.
There are
in
a lot
MLA.
Of smaller parties. And they're an interesting one. But just as soon as you start to see the ties in their platform and the things that they're forcing commitment to, then you start to wonder, is this ever going to conflict with my constituents? And
is that true of all of the parties that you looked at?
I think every party at some point is going to conflict. And I think, honestly, every MLA who's probably ever been in power has at some point had that happen to them, where they were forced to follow party lines and, you know, felt that they weren't representing their constituents. But it's all about the team for them. And if you're in with the big team and you're working together, then the idea is that you'll be able to get something done. So they go along with it because, you know, this time I took a fall, but next time hopefully they'll do what I want. And I don't think it always works out. And I definitely don't think it's the way our government system was actually built, because we originally never had parties when our system was built, and it's never really been restructured to have them.
Yeah. They turned into a business as opposed to a party, but
in a large way.
Every once in a while, I like to think of the word party as party, but I don't think that's how it's read anymore. Well, then, what is the role of our MLA?
Well, the role of your MLA is supposed to be that you choose a member of your community, and this used to be a bit smaller, and in many areas it still is, but the idea is that person's supposed to go to Victoria and represent you and your area's interests. And of course, this becomes an immediate conflict when you start getting the parties involved. I even had a constituent talk about that, and he says, as far as he's concerned, if you're running as a for a party, you're automatically in a conflict of interest.
Do you see it that way?
I think in a large way. At times, you definitely would be. Not outright, I don't think. I mean, you do have some opportunity to try and share what your community wants, but at the end of the day, I mean, the party makes the choices and they tell you what to say, and our voting history says that our MLAs aren't standing up to them.
You've been reporting on politics for a long time, Ian. Is that how you see it as well? is there a question embedded in that?
There's truth to it for sure. Yeah. There's like you were saying, there's always decisions that they have to make or side with that they know may not stick well with the people back home, but I think generally they've been, you know, they've stuck to their guns, whether it's NDP or BC Liberal. But yeah, there's been issues. Yeah.
When one elects to run for office, and that's different from being elected to office, you take on a kind of a larger persona. How do you see your persona, if you will, as an MLA? How would you be different and the same as the Columbia River Revelstoke MLA?
That's one of those questions. Well, You know, I want to open it up basically. I want to make it so that the relationship between your MLA and your constituents is very different. And I have a few strategies to accomplish this. And Doug Klovchuk's actually on board with one of them as well, and he hopes to accomplish it as well, which is good news. And that's he wants to create a committee within each of our major cities that will go and go out and talk to people, and then come back and bring back ideas from all the different areas. And to have them be an advisory council to the MLA. And I agree with that. Along with some modernizations, I would like to see an online forum that would allow people to discuss it politely, or else it's not going to be tolerated. But I think that you could allow a lot of people to have a lot more input through that. And you could go and make it so that they can come in, they can talk about their issues, they can talk about how their business is struggling, they can talk about infrastructure projects that they want done, and all of this could be put onto there, and it would allow your constituency office to be able to look through what's going on and say, okay, well, you're having this business problem. The government actually already offers this program, because there's a lot of programs, a lot of programs to help businesses that people don't know about.
Well, it's interesting. It sounds like you're moving toward a social media kind of addition to the mix.
I would like to up the social media, but I do want to keep the personal side of it as well. But I definitely think that there's a lot of ability for people to communicate that way. I've been amazed throughout my campaign how many people have chosen to use Facebook or similar social media sources as the way to reach out to me and talk about things. That definitely took me off guard. I didn't see it would be that way. But that and emails, I mean, I've only gotten probably 20, 30 phone calls and tons and tons and tons of emails and Facebook.
Well, Ian, you're now 7 years into Eno, which is all internet based. Are you seeing this same kind of movement to electronic communication?
Very much so, yeah.
And does that play into what the MLA is or would be?
Absolutely. I think MLAs could really utilize, let's say, Facebook, for example,
I
very
don't
well.
happen to like Facebook. I do it, but I don't like it. Can we expand that to be social media platforms?
Yeah, sure. LinkedIn, Twitter, all the different kinds. I think it's a cost-effective medium for people to reach out, for government to reach out and speak to the people without having to spend a fortune on media, on advertising and things like that to get that message across. Now they can just throw it out on Facebook and big, fish hook and see what they can catch.
Well, it's interesting thinking about you as an MLA from this riding. It is hard to be all over this riding. It's a big geographical footprint. Isn't that part of what the MLA challenge is in a riding like this?
It is definitely a huge part of our challenge. Our riding is just massive, and with decent sized communities spread out. Most of the other ridings of any similar size at least have a base area. They have some major city or a major area, but we're almost one side to the other, basically a 5 hour drive to go from here to Revelstoke. And
Yes.
yeah, it's definitely a challenge.
Well, as an independent, it's the question that comes to my mind is a little different. So be patient with me with this. Say that you win as the MLA. And I would ordinarily say, but your party doesn't win. How does that affect the representation? And as I say, because you're running as an independent, it's somewhat different, but still, how do you have your voice heard if you're not the dominant force? Does that put it a little better?
Yeah, no, obviously, unless we end up with a minority government and you end up in a coalition, then there's no way that, I end up in government. And obviously that changes how things work a little bit. But a lot of people talk about the in government thing. I've heard the advertisements where they're talking about how you'll be better off with an in government MLA, and I really personally do not believe this. Back in 2001 to 2005, Kimberley especially saw a lot of things happen in our government. We had an in-government MLA at that time, and she was sent as a representative to come talk to us and tell us why the government was doing what they were doing, when she should have been on the other side fighting for us. For me, it would be that simple. No matter what's going on, if it's hurting our riding, I know where I stand. I should be sitting there fighting the government, arguing about it, making sure that everybody here is being heard, their concerns are being heard and discussed. And as far as them actually having any more power, I mean, they still only have the one vote that they have. And past that, the only way to really have any more of that is through working with your party, which, I mean, I like to hope that I'd be able to work with some of the people as well. I mean, I don't want to go in there and just, you know, be aggressive and angry and start trying to tell them they're all doing it wrong. I'm hoping to be able to cooperate, but obviously that's a two-sided deal.
The big parties obviously have lots of resources to spend on an election. And I guess you're carrying the bill by yourself. So you feel there's a bit of an unfair advantage to, let's say, the NDP and the Liberals for the signage and the advertising and all that, as opposed to the smaller parties or the independents who can't afford that kind of media time.
Certainly. Our rules are even written a little bit that way. For example, until I received my official certificate of candidacy, which only happened when the election started, I wasn't actually able to hand out tax receipts for donations. Anybody who would donate to me as an independent would have to have just given me money, just straight out. And the parties wrote those rules. They get to collect money for 4 years, and independents get to collect it for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And we are definitely at a disadvantage, but if you get into government, you have all the same equal rights that anybody else would have from that point on. But obviously, it's a lot more of a struggle to get there.
I'm trying not to use the word bomb thrower, but I can't quite find a way around it. How do you keep from just being somebody who is a bomb thrower in the midst of this entire electoral process and representative government? How do you keep from just being a big noisy thing off at the side? How do you become part of the working interior of a government if you are an independent? I just don't know this. How would you do this?
So you're talking like if I got elected, yes, but wasn't obviously in government? Okay. Well,
even if you were in government, but the odds are if, yes, you got elected, you would not be in
it's
government.
It's possible, but not likely, right, at all. But basically, it just comes down to trying to represent your community and making it so that you're trying to work with people, and again, not trying to necessarily just obstruct everything that they're doing, which I feel there's a lot of going on in our legislative assembly. The parties just want to make the other guy look bad, and they don't necessarily care about what's right or wrong. For a large part, there are definitely policies within each party that I think are definitely worth supporting. And there are policies in each party that I think are definitely not doing us any favors. And for me, it would be going through and deciding what's good, what's bad, where do I stand, and trying my best to be a honest voice that's trying to represent my constituents and with no other motive.
Okay. What are some of the things that the government are doing that you could get behind or don't agree with in this riding particular?
In our riding in particular, well, obviously there's a lot of questions going on with Jumbo Wild, and I think it's about time to admit that that's been spoken for, and I think that it's time to shut that down. Even if they were to open it up now, even if it worked, there would be protesters sitting outside. It's not going to be a real project, and I think it's time that our government admits that one for us. We've been fighting for a long time to get a conservation officer. The NDP say, or for Revelstoke, and the NDP say that they're going to increase the number of conservation officers. Haven't specifically said to that riding, but I have my hopes high that they would do that under that commitment. The BC Liberals, a little less sure about it. I see no mention of it in their platform, but I've heard Doug suggest that if he gets elected, that might happen. But if he doesn't, I'm not too sure.
What kind of a wrap-up would you like? What's your elevator speech and why people should be supportive of you, Justin Hulls?
Well, largely, I just want to go out and get representation for my community. It's why I'm running. It's what happened for me. I was looking at it, and I don't see a party that represents me, and I don't see that being able to change by working with any of the parties. And so I want to represent our community, and I'm hoping that people want to be represented.
Thank you very much for joining us in the conversation.
Yes, thank you.